Good morning.
Good morning, counsel.
May it please the court, Jordan Brooks for Lieutenant Vanessa Moore, representing Howard University Civil Rights Law Clinic. Lieutenant Moore was continually subjected to sexual harassment and hostile work environment by her supervisor, Mr. Stephen Gaffigan. Mr. Gaffigan would make lewd comments about the manner in which Lieutenant Moore's uniform pants fit, and on several occasions slapped her on the buttocks. Lieutenant Moore continually asked Mr. Gaffigan to stop. However, when he refused, she filed a suit. She filed a claim, an internal claim, with the Metropolitan's Office of Diversity and EEO Compliance in March of 2004, at which point the Metropolitan Police Department placed Lieutenant Moore on unpaid sick leave. By September of 2004, the Metropolitan Police Department's Office of Diversity and EEO Compliance issued a summary report in which they sustained a claim for sexual harassment and hostile work environment pursuant to the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and also recommended that the 672 hours of leave that she was forced to take be restored. Between June 14th of 2005 and September of 2005, Lieutenant Moore diligently pursued the restoration of her leave. During that time, the Metropolitan Police Department reassured her that her leave would be restored. However, to this day, her leave has not been restored.
Can we just go back a moment?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your main argument on the contract claim in your opening brief is that the discovery rule applies.
Yes, Your Honor.
And could you just elaborate how you see that as working here?
Yes, Your Honor. Generally, the statute of limitations begins to run after a reasonable time for performance has expired.
Yeah.
However, if the injury is obscure, then the discovery rule would apply, meaning that...
So what was secret about the injury here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The circumstances of this case, Lieutenant Moore was promised that her leave would be restored. And even to this day, the Metropolitan Police Department has made no indication that they have, one, absolutely determined that she was not going to get her leave, and also if her leave was going to be restored, when exactly.
Yeah, the discovery rule talks about information that plaintiff either not only was unaware of, but couldn't be expected to have become aware of. And,
yes.
And nothing you've said says anything about that at all.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Lieutenant Moore didn't know.
I mean, what you're saying now may or may not go to the question of the reasonable time, but I don't see how it goes to discovery at all.
Well, Your Honor, at the 12B6 stage, we must accept all factual allegations and draw all reasonable.
Yeah, but we still have to have some sort of legal analysis that takes us where we go. And the discovery rule doesn't take us anywhere. As far as I can see, nothing you've said convinces me that the discovery rule does you any good in this case.
Well, Your Honor, the discovery rule was developed to redress situations in which the plaintiff, there was no... The
discovery rule was developed in court.
Yes.
It's not crystal clear that it applies to contract at all.
Okay, Your Honor. Well, it's our position today that it actually does, in fact, apply to this contract claim because of the fact that that Lieutenant Moore's injury was.
How does it differ from reasonable time in a case in which you don't have a fixed date of compliance? When does the discovery rule kick in?
The discovery rule kicks in when the plaintiff knew or should have known of the injury.
That's the statement of the rule. All right. When does that occur on the ground in the facts of this case? When are you saying she became aware of the breach of contract or the harm from the breach, if you want to take it one step further?
Sure.
When do you say she became aware of it, if not within 90 days or whatever was an apparently reasonable time?
Well, she became aware of it sometime after January of 2006, closer to March of 2006 when she filed her EEOC claim.
The statute, though, there are trade-offs in any of this, and for better or for worse, the District of Columbia has a 3-year statute of limitations. And if the District of Columbia, according to the allegations and the complaints, strung her out, as the third anniversary approached, it was incumbent upon her to file suit. That's all that means, and I agree with Judge Williams. I don't see any discovery rule application here. She knew always during that 3-year period that she wasn't getting the relief that was promised to her. And they had 3 years to give it to her, and when the clock began to wind down, it was her obligation to file suit. Otherwise, there is no limit. It could be 10 years. It could be five. It could be six. Who knows?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, I wouldn't suggest that 5 or 10 years would be the relevant time period, but at least 6 months would be a reasonable time for Lieutenant.
Okay, 6 months.
Yes, Your Honor.
6 months doesn't get you there.
Well,
right, because we have the the promise. When? What's your date for the promise?
The district.
April 05.
No, Your Honor.
No, June.
June 14th, 05. Yes, Your Honor.
June 14th. Okay.
Yep.
And
when did?
That's actually 3 years, 7 months before the filing.
Well, Your Honor, it was, between June 14th and 2005 and September of 2005, and September is the relevant date that I'm using here.
Why is September the relevant date you're using here?
Oh,
you just pick a date, counsel.
Yeah, I understand, Your Honor. The reason why we're using September of 2005 is because even in the September 2005 emails, the district still promised Lieutenant Moore that her leave would be restored. So while the contract might have been created on June 14th of 2005, there were continual reassurances.
Well, the contract was created before that. June 14th is the date when Cockett tells Moore, I'll look into it.
Well, that's
but there was already an agreement before that, wasn't there? And Cockett's just telling Moore, all right, you haven't got your leave back yet, but I'll look into it, right?
Well, that's not our position this morning.
So at most, that would be when the breach occurred rather than when the contract's made, wouldn't it?
Well, the reason why we cite June 14th is that the summary report, actually the final exit letter, by the Metropolitan CEO office was April 20th, 2005. That's where they recommended that Lieutenant Moore's leave be restored.
Yeah.
It was on June.
I'm sorry,
Your Honor.
Finish your answer.
Okay, thank you. It was on June 14th, 2005, when the Metropolitan Police Department ensured Lieutenant Moore that her leave would be restored. The April 20th date was only the recommendation, and the June 14th date was the promise.
You've got another problem, a pretty severe one, is that the. As far as I can tell, the discovery rule was never raised in the district court, which is why the district court never alluded to it. It wasn't raised in the complaint. It wasn't raised in response to the motion to dismiss. And we have a rule that says you can't raise new arguments on appeal for the first time that were neither raised nor considered in the district court.
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't 100% clear it wasn't 100% clear, I'm sorry, that the district court's reasoning behind denying Lieutenant Moore's contract claim other than the running of the statute of limitations. And it is our position this morning that given the vague argument that we received from the district court, we were asserting that the discovery rule now does apply. And I do understand the position that it's not necessarily a new issue.
It wasn't raised in the district court.
It wasn't raised in the district court, but.
Okay. There's another, well, more questions on the contract? On the EEOC, you said in your brief that March 12, 2006 was the date of the filing of the complaint.
Yes.
Right? And you now adhere to that?
Well, Your Honor, no.
Your reply brief appeared to retreat from that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Your Honor, initially we did cite the March 12, 2006 date, but however, through our own research and discovery with the EEO's office, we actually found that the complaint was an informal inquiry was filed with the EEOC office in April of 2005.
Yeah. Wait, that's April of 2005?
Yes.
That's when the MPD issued its decision.
When it issued its exit letter, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But the last day of alleged sexual harassment was January of 2005, right? January 6th?
Of the sexual harassment, the last date was of March of 2004. The hostile work environment, however,
Right.
Oh yes, Your Honor. That occurred in September of 2005 with the last email sent by the District of Columbia to Lieutenant Moore, reassuring her that her leave would be restored, knowing that they were not going to do that. In order to dismiss Lieutenant Moore...
Well, essentially what you're making, as I understand your presentation to us, is that, number one, the D.C. concedes that the 12B6 cannot be used on your EEOC claim, but wants to convert it to summary judgment. And basically what you've done in our court is, and this is one example, is really filed in what is in essence a Rule 56F motion, which precludes summary judgment until there's discovery. That's what you're asking for.
Yes, Your Honor.
To clear up, you know, exactly when the complaint was filed and when the last day of sexual harassment or hostile work environment took place and so on and so forth.
That's correct, right? Your Honor. Okay. We also would not like the motion to dismiss to be converted to Rule 56, because in order to do that, especially at the 12B6 stage, the complaint must reveal the failure to exhaust. And at this point, Lieutenant Moore does not allege, nor does the complaint reveal such failure to exhaust. And failure to exhaust administrative remedies is an affirmative defense, which the district has the burden of proving and has not done so at this stage. And therefore, they should not be allowed to shift the burden of proof now onto Lieutenant Moore before they have met their burden. And it is our, for the aforementioned reasons above, Your Honors, it was improper for the district court to dismiss Lieutenant Moore's breach of contract claim and Title VII claim for failure to exhaust administrative remedies, and we pray that you would reverse and remand this case.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the appellee.
Morning, Your Honor. Stacey Anderson on behalf of the district. I'd like to begin with the contract claim. It's the district's position that the statute of limitations with respect to that claim.
You may want to spend more time on the Title VII claim.
Certainly.
Do we have any questions on the contract claim?
I do have one question.
Okay.
The argument made in the reply brief, which is a little late on this point, but it is made, is that a reasonable time is longer for a big bureaucracy like the District of Columbia. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, a couple responses. First of all, I think the April 20th, 2005 decision was the final administrative decision in this case. It's been characterized as a contract, but actually it was, in fact, a final administrative decision. And I've suggested in my brief that one benchmark, perhaps, for measuring a reasonable time to effectuate the remedy recommended in that final administrative decision is what the courts typically do when they grant Title VII relief, which is to grant 30 days, you know, the government 30 days to remedy the situation. So I think 30 days would be a reasonable time. But Judge Randolph, I think you made a very good point. 3 years from April 20th was certainly more than a reasonable time in which to conclude that you, Lieutenant Moore.
Well, at least the principle that you take the number of years in the statute of limitations plus a reasonable time, because it's only when the reasonable time is run that the statute starts.
Correct, Your Honor.
Obviously, in terms of prudence, it makes more sense to file as the three-year limit approaches.
Certainly, but again, I think 30 days, 60 days, 90 days are reasonable in this situation. It's clear at all times that Lieutenant Moore did not have her leave restored. She was aware of that fact, and she characterizes the situation as being strung along. Certainly, if that was her view at the time, she had no reason to believe, certainly within that three-year period, that she was going to receive the relief she sought. So as to the contract claim, we do believe that more than a reasonable enough time passed. As to the EEOC Title VII issues, we would ask that the court accept the judicial admission that was made by counsel for Ms. Moore in her opening brief. She asserted four times in that brief that they filed the EEOC complaint on March 12th, 2006. It was a unequivocal, intentional, express admission of a fact at issue in this case by a party who had unique knowledge, Who better to know when that EEOC complaint was filed than Lieutenant Moore? The district relied on that in responding in this appeal, and that is a fact that is dispositive of all of the EEOC claims. It is a very simple fact, and asking the court to convert the district's motion to dismiss into one for summary judgment, we're not asking the court to parse the record for a lot of information.
We've not, in my recollection, converted at the appellate level a 12B6 into summary judgment without notice to the other side that the court's going to do so. And actually, I don't recall us ever doing it, but generally speaking, district judges, if they're going to convert, they notify the about to be losing party, look, I'm going to convert this into a summary judgment, summary judgment, to give them a chance to make filings upon which summary judgment can be based. Shouldn't we remand to the district court? Why shouldn't we remand to the district court for that procedure at the very least?
Your Honor, I think one reason is...
And I would add, I just want to add to that, the old rule was 56F, and I just looked, I haven't looked at the, it's now 56D.
I didn't know that either. I knew what you meant when you said 56.
Because the rule is summary judgment can be, you can move for summary judgment at any time. And oftentimes, if that's done before any discovery, there's not an opportunity for the non-movement to marshal the evidence necessary to defeat the summary judgment. So anyway, but by converting on appeal, you've really sort of deprived the non-moving party of the opportunity to file a Rule 56D motion.
And I understand that, Your Honor, but I think this case presents some unique facts. To be quite honest with the court, I was surprised that this is the brief they filed in light of the district's brief in the initial round of briefing. I think the district was very candid with the court that the problems it faced in this case. There was no need for appellants to go down this road. I think to the extent that we're at this point and asking for summary judgments, appellants invited it by providing the missing pieces of information that were fatal to their case.
Yeah.
They brought this on themselves, I guess, is my position. And I think the court needs to hold them to that. Again, unique piece of information that they were in a position to know, and they chose to bring that to the court's attention. And it's, again, a simple case. Once we have that one piece of information, this case is very simple. There is not a factual dispute that the last act of sexual harassment was in March 2004. There's not a factual dispute that the failure to recertify her in her service
weapon. Is there a factual dispute about when the EEOC complaint was filed?
No, sir. No, there's not. I think the record is clear. All those documents are present in the record. The district certainly doesn't dispute. Oh, I'm sorry, the EEOC complaint in the record.
There is, isn't there?
There could possibly conceivably docket number.
Just send it back and get it resolved.
Yeah.
I can understand the court's position with respect to that.
And outside of judicial efficiency, what's the downside to us remanding that for conversion to summary judgment?
Other than judicial efficiency, Your Honor, there's probably not a downside to doing that.
We're not all that efficient to begin with. So.
I appreciate the opportunity. We'd ask that the district
court
judge.
Thank you, counsel. You had a couple of minutes left, actually, if you would like to rebut.
With regard to the time period for the contract claim, the reasonableness, based on the Murray case, the reasonableness, time applies. Which means that 6 months is a reasonable time, given the actual facts of the case. It took between March of 2004 and September of 2004, 6 months, in order for the Metropolitan Police Department to make a summary finding of sustaining Lieutenant Moore's claim for sexual harassment and hostile work environment. And from September of 2005 to April of 2005 was another 6 months that the district took in order to issue its final exit letter sustaining Lieutenant Moore's claim for sexual harassment and hostile work environment, and the recommendation that her leave should be restored. So it was at least reasonable, based on the circumstances of this case, for Lieutenant Moore to wait at least 6 months between September of 2005 and March of 2006, which is a little bit over 6 months, but after January of 2006 for Lieutenant Moore to at least realize that her leave would not be restored.
Go to your Title VII and tell us why we shouldn't rely on your admissions of the date of filing in the opening brief.
Well, based on the fact that we have yet to conduct sufficient discovery in order to determine exactly what...
I understand it, but you made the admission in your opening brief of a date of filing. Why shouldn't we accept the party's solemn party's judicial acknowledgement of that date?
Well, Your Honor, we shouldn't accept that date simply because Lieutenant Moore was not, she didn't have the actual documents at the time of filing the complaint, and she did not know exactly when.
Why did you say it then in your brief?
Your Honor, it was different counsel at that point in time, but it was the only date that Lieutenant Moore could recall.
Was it still different counsel at that point? Or?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And therefore, Your Honor, we pray that you would reverse this case. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The case is submitted. Give it a recess.